Hello and welcome. This is High Velocity Business Radio. And this is Sander Bean, your host for today. Desiree Scales is away. And Kevin, it's great to be here today.
I know. I just wish it was a little sunnier out, don't you?
I do. Did you have a good St. Patrick's Day?
I did. I actually had, this is my most low-key. I mean, my last name's Finn, so I should celebrate pretty hearty. But instead, I went ahead and made a nice dinner for my fiance, and we just stayed in and we watched a movie. So,
well, I'm really glad that you didn't overdo it, because today we're very fortunate to have a very interesting guest with us. Today we have joining us from San Jose, California, by telephone, Mark Zients. And Mark has been a telecom executive and entrepreneur for almost three decades, focusing on developing and emerging technologies and services in high-growth markets. Currently, Mark is the president and CEO of Ascent Incorporated. Now, Ascent is an innovative mobile data service company that builds a bridge between IP world and the wireless world, delivering wireless communication services to mobile operators around the world. Mark has been the vice president and CEO of several companies, Ortiva Wireless, Fast Mobile, Contata, and Westel, some of which have been sold off to household name technology companies such as RIM, Research in Motion, or Dialogic. Mark has a Atlanta tie in that he earned his undergraduate and his MBA from Georgia Institute of Technology, also known as Georgia Tech around here. And Mark is an independent director for several other large technology companies based both in the United States and abroad. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sander.
So, Mark, the first thing I want to ask you is a little bit about your Atlanta ties to get you kind of in the mood for the show that we have here today. Tell us about your connections with Atlanta.
Well, certainly I have fond memories of Atlanta dating back to Georgia Tech, but those memories are faded slightly since that was over three decades ago. But nevertheless, I was actually thinking about Atlanta this winter with the bad weather, and it reminded me of when I was in school, and whenever there'd just be a little bit of snow, how we could actually make money by going out on the highway and reselling Varsity food at quite a markup.
Well, that sounds like the way to go. As a matter of fact, I don't know that if anyone was that entrepreneurial this time around. So, Mark, tell us a little bit, for the audience here who may not be familiar with Ascent, tell us a little bit about the company and how Ascent assists mobile network operators.
Yeah, Ascent is certainly not a household name to really anybody except people in the industry. But if your listeners have traveled outside the United States, there's a great chance that they've actually been on Ascent's network. Hmm. So what I mean by this is Ascent is one of those companies that interconnects the mobile operators so that when you go out of the country, you can use your smartphone apps or email or for surfing the internet. So for data usage, you can still be connected to your home operator through the Ascent network. So your subscribers in Atlanta, you know, they may be on an AT&T network or a Verizon network or Sprint or others, there's a really good chance that depending on where they're going, that the interconnection between their home network and the visiting network in the other country, that the connection between those two networks is made by Ascent.
Yeah, I think a lot of people assume that that connectivity is just worked out between, you know, carrier to carrier. So that an AT&T would talk to, say, a carrier in another country, but that turns out not to be the most efficient way to do it. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, certainly big carriers might have some direct connections, but in general, they can connect to a lot more carriers by going through an inter-exchange company like Ascent. And the fact is that, you know, if you're a large operator in the U.S., on any given day, how many people do you have in Colombia, or how many people do you have in Mongolia? You might not have that many, and it wouldn't justify having a direct connection. But connecting in to Ascent could give you the connections into those visiting countries, and therefore it becomes very efficient. So a large operator might have a combination of some direct connections, but even then they would want to have backup or redundancy, and they want to leverage the fact that we're connected to operators in over 120 countries.
Wow. So you kind of manage, so that gives it a chance to manage the complexity, I'm guessing, too.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's talk about it a little bit, Mark. You've run a number of companies in your career. I kind of glossed over a few of them, and I don't mean to underplay that because you've been an executive in a chief executive role for many years now. But now you've been at the helm at Ascent for what, about 6 or 7 months? And is that about right? How long?
That's correct.
Yeah, and my question to you was, what excites you about running Ascent? What do you see as the prospects? What's interesting about Ascent for you?
Well, first and foremost, I think at the heart of any company is the people running the company. So it's just a great group of people. And when I say a great group of people, it's a very diversified company. You're talking to me sitting in our San Jose office, but we've got colleagues and associates and offices in 20 other countries as well. So we're spread out around the globe, but the common theme is our everybody who works at this company, they're good people, they care deeply about the success of our customers, and they care about each other. So it's a great group of people. That's number one. Number two, equally important, we've got wonderful customers. We're very fortunate. Our customers provide a vital service. Sandra, I don't know about you, but if I leave the house in the morning and I don't have my wallet, I'm going to get by just fine. If I don't have my cell phone, I'm turning around. It's the one thing I can't live without. So we're in an industry that we provide a vital service, and I think that makes people feel good about the work we're doing. It's not optional to be connected these days. So we're in a great industry. We've got a great team. We've got great customers, and the momentum behind our business is very powerful. Every day, people use more data than the day before. Hmm. Why? Because there's great applications. There's great content. Increasingly, it's how we communicate.
Yeah. So you've got the global, and you've got the data, and I understand that the folks at Ascent are big users of your own services in that regard, because every time I try to get a hold of you, Mark, and I think it's worthwhile for our listeners to point out that Mark and I know each other. We go way back. Mark was actually the person who hired me out of college and took a chance on me. So Mark has a very dear spot in my heart. Thank you, Mark. I'll say that on the air. But I was going to say that every time I'm trying to reach you, Mark, you're in another distant point on the globe. So tell us about your travel schedule just a little bit, as an interest to the listeners.
Well, first, thank you for that nice compliment, and you did a great job. So it wasn't charity; it was hard work, and you know that.
Yeah, thank you.
But the other thing you notice, Sandra, is whenever you try to reach me, I get back to you right away. That's because I am connected. Mm-hmm. So no matter where I go, and I've been to multiple locations through Asia, through Eastern and Western Europe, in the Mideast, in South America. Wherever I go, I'm connected. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's very important, not just from a business perspective, but from a personal standpoint. Traveling all the time isn't necessarily easy for anybody that does it, or even traveling on occasion. But you want to be connected to your family and your friends and your colleagues. And so our technology enables that. So I know that the fact that I know that anybody can reach me, if it's a matter of helping out a kid with homework, if it's a matter of getting back to a colleague quickly, all those things are important. And the fact that we help with a service that provides that, it makes you feel good.
Yeah.
And I think we all want to do work that we feel good about in the end and that we believe in.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. And so this has probably played into some of your thinking. I know that you've recently changed the slogan of the company to the Global Connectivity Company. So it makes sense based on what you're telling us here. But what was your thinking? What went into that thinking to actually come up with that slogan and decide that you're going to pivot that direction with what you wanted to say as the core message for the company?
Global connectivity is about more than just the examples I've given so far. And the examples I've given so far, it really deals with a human being on the other end of a mobile device. But increasingly, the connections that are being made on wireless networks are not between people, it's between things. Mm. And you may have heard of people talking about the Internet of Things, but the notion here are that machines talk to machines. In a simple form, that could be an iPad talking to another iPad across a wireless network. There's not necessarily voice, or what we would call traditional voice, but it could also be your car being connected into a central monitoring station if you have a crash, if you need directions, concierge services. There can be other types of applications where we're talking about devices or things talking to each other. There's actually, in the world, we're sitting here with about 5 billion mobile phones, but about 20 billion connected devices. Wow. So increasingly, those devices are becoming mobile. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. You might have something, if for some unforeseen reason you needed to have an implant in your body, you know, maybe it's a valve for a heart, that valve might have a wireless connection so that the integrity of the device was always observed and monitored. So if it was degrading before it became too late, you could know that you had to go in and get the battery change or get the valve replaced. Mm. Well, you want to have that service whether you're in Atlanta or whether you're in England or whether you're in China. That's a pretty important service to you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I talk about connectivity and global connectivity, the word we didn't include in there was mobile phone or connected phones. It was just about the bigger theme, connecting enterprises, connecting devices, connecting people. It's broader than just mobile phones.
Right, because you were talking about earlier that there's more data, not less. So this is one of those areas that I'm assuming is really exploding in that regard. It's not just a matter that I'm doing more email on my smartphone.
Right. I think the reason we see data growing around the world is for really so many reasons. One, it's more connected devices. So more devices equals more data. But Sander, every new phone you get is more capable of consuming more data because it has a bigger screen, a higher resolution screen. So even when you get a new phone, even watching a video, it may be a higher resolution than the previous phone, meaning it consumes more data. Mm. Number three, lifestyle. Young people these days are never going to be tethered to a wall. They're always going to be wireless. So increasingly, the world is a wireless place. And finally, number four, the content continues to become more compelling to use data. You know, the days of YouTube user-generated content have not peaked. Every year, we seem to be doubling the amount of content that's uploaded every minute of the day. Right now, I think YouTube uploads something like 100 hours of fresh content every minute of every day. That's an amazing amount of new content, not to mention the fact that there's professional content out there, and it's changing our behavior. Mm-hmm. Just think about it. I mean, Netflix is a producer of content. They release the entire series at once, and people are doing what's called now binge video consuming. And guess what? Sometimes they're doing it on a wireless network.
Yeah.
So our lifestyles, our devices, our content, all these things are changing. And yeah. To the user, you don't care about how hard it is. You don't care that you're not in the United States. You just want it to work everywhere. That's all you expect. And we try to help our customers make that happen.
It's amazing because I was just out of town this weekend and my daughter was doing some binge. I've not heard that term before, binge consuming. She was binge consuming some Netflix herself. And so I hear what you're saying. And it leads to the next question that this must be wreaking havoc for the average mobile network operator, for any mobile network operator for that matter. And, you know, we hear so much in the advertisements and the press about, you know, what's happening in the mobile market, new handsets you alluded to earlier, consuming more data, and then all these new data and voice plans. It seems to be coming out continuously. So the question is, with all of this stuff in motion and all these different things happening, how is ASINT dealing with this change, and how are they helping mobile network operators with this tremendous change we're seeing?
Well, we need to give our customers controls so that they can create packages for their customers that make sense. So one of the things that we've done is as consumers move to the next generation network, or LTE, or 4G, as people may have heard it, we have actually brought our customers from an architecture that is now all IP. And on top of that service we provide, we're able to provide analytics as well as control features that allow a consumer or a provider to come up with packages and even limitations that make sense for their customers. Because what you don't want to have happen is you leave the country and you get bill shock. You don't want to get a huge bill, but you do want to have the service. So carriers may be offering different packages, a package that's appropriate for the occasional tourist who's leaving the country that's cost effective. Maybe it's throttled to a certain speed just because all they need is some basic email connectivity. On the other hand, they might have another package for somebody like me where I need a ton of data, I need the best experience possible, and I'm willing to pay a premium because I'm a business user who's traveling the globe constantly. So what my provider offers me may be very different than they want to offer to a general consumer who perhaps travels internationally on occasion. Hmm. So we're putting all the tools in place as part of our service to enable our customers to allow them to design packages that make sense.
So really what we're seeing with all this mass customization with the different plans that are coming out, and you hear them all the time that things are changing, especially in the international realm, around the different packages that might be de facto versus ones you buy. Really, in a way, ASIN is helping with that customization by giving the tools to enable that customization.
Absolutely. And by the way, we see other changes coming in the way people use their phones when they travel abroad as well. Mm-hmm. And again, our technology enables this to happen. For example, at the Consumer Electronics Show in January, one of the carriers announced that they were working with sponsored data. What the notion of sponsored data is when you're traveling, let's say in a network or perhaps outside the country, if you go to a certain application, maybe that application isn't being charged to you for using it. So the data you're consuming isn't being used. Let me give you a personal example here. I travel extensively on the Star Alliance with my home airline being United. Now, I've got a United app on my phone. Why, after buying an expensive ticket, should I have to pay United to check in when I'm outside of the country on my United app?
With your data, you mean with your data plan? Yeah, using your data plan, right, okay.
That's right. So that should be zero charged or sponsored, and then my home operator should have a deal with United where they charge United a wholesale rate for that data connection. Now, everybody's a winner in this proposition because United has an 800 number I can dial in just about any country in the world, but there's no more expensive way to service a customer than to have them talk to a person. Self-service is much more cost-effective. So it costs United less to pay for my data than it would for me to call them and pay for my phone call and for me to talk to a live human being. And by the way, I prefer self-service. So I'm going to be satisfied more. I'm going to use the app. And by the way, since I'm using the app, maybe I just consume a little bit more data roaming. So maybe the visiting network and the home network get a little bit more revenue. I get service by my other provider, United Airlines. United buys in wholesale from the home carrier, who in turn gets an enterprise sale. So it's a nice equation in which everybody gets something and everybody benefits. But that kind of change that we foresee happening in the future, we're able to enable to implement through our technology.
Right, because you need to have the controls in the back end.
That's correct.
So let's pivot this conversation a little bit. One of the things, and you mentioned it earlier, and we hear it constantly, is around LTE, the long-term evolution, or 4G. So talk to us about LTE in general, and specifically talk a little bit, if you will, around voice over LTE, or VoLTE as it's sometimes called, and how that's going to change the landscape for us maybe as consumers, but more importantly for mobile network operators who might be listening into the program.
So when it comes to LTE, it's really the fourth generation of networks. In some ways, we've had five because we've had something called 3.5G as well. Mm-hmm. The first generation was really just basic voice. That happened about 28 years ago when I got my phone number. Then we had 2G, which included some very basic data. 3G is when data really became alive. There were some faster versions in 3.5G. So 4G is just really the next evolution. In fact, LTE stands for long-term evolution. So it's the next iteration, if you will, of cellular technology that allows data and specifically more IP communications. So as LTE matures, you'll see certain operators introducing voice over LTE. Or another way is it's really voice on IP or voice on data. It's another way to use that data network and data connectivity. So there's certain customers that have introduced this service commercially. The first companies in the world to do this were operators in the world were in Asia. For example, we work with all the carriers in Korea. They all have VoLTE now. Other operators in Singapore, Hong Kong also have VoLTE. So a lot of the LTE was introduced in those markets first. Now they have VoLTE. What it's allowing the carrier to do is offer a voice service over data, not unlike perhaps using Skype, which is an over-the-top way of having voice. But this way, the operator can participate. So it's a way of the operator perhaps bringing value, higher quality voice. And by the way, never discount the importance of when you do have a voice call of having high quality. So VoLTE represents, I think, an opportunity to change how the operators are doing business, to leverage their investment in the LTE network, and to position them for the continual evolution of the network. Because we're never going to sit here with our jobs and say, we're done. There will be a 5G, and behind that will be a 6G. But what I can say with confidence is, I don't know exactly the timing, it will be based on IP or data. So bringing voice over that data infrastructure only makes sense in the long term.
Right. Sounds like this is a pretty big leap insofar as just a great technological way to go, not insofar as something that's difficult, but just something that's really going to position for really a long-term view, even if that's going to be named 5G, 6G, 7G, whatever.
By all means, however, I'll take it back to a consumer mindset. Sandra, I don't think they care about the technology. Mm-hmm. They just care that it works. They care that it works everywhere. They care that it's cost effective. And for those things, they'll place value on it. So I can get all excited about VoLTE, but I think a customer just cares that they have a really good experience on the wireless network, and that will make them a loyal customer.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
I've had my phone number since cellular's been introduced, because one of the first places in the U.S. it was introduced was the Chicago market. And yeah, I can't imagine not having the service, and I'm constantly impressed by my operator in that they are upgrading and making things more available and making things, frankly, more cost-effective over time. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing you got to remember about technology. My first phone cost me about $3,500, and I paid about $1.50 a minute to use it.
You know,
now we get a phone that has more power than NASA had when they launched the lunar lander, for a few hundred dollars. And we're paying $15 a month to have an iPhone on a network with unlimited voice and text.
Yeah, one of the engineers in the studio here with me, younger guy, he just about fell out of his chair when you said how much the phone cost. And I know you weren't even adding in the inflation over time. That was probably the actual cost back then, right?
It was the actual cost, and that phone had about 20 minutes of talk time. But that's pretty good because two things would happen after 20 minutes. Your arm would seize with lactic acid from the weight, and your ear was bright red and hot from the power and energy that the phone emitted. So and by the way, you just spent $30 on a phone call.
That's right, so you better get off.
So you better get off.
Too funny. Well, it kind of segues to my next question to you, which is, what do you see other trends that ASINT's seeing and that you're seeing in the mobile market that listeners may not have heard of or haven't been really thinking about as something that's going to be an interesting new trend going forward?
Yeah, I often like to say that with technology, nothing is new. It just works better. Mm-hmm. If you think about, Apple as a great innovator, in some ways, they've really just made things work better. There was music before. They repackaged music. They repackaged how we played music. If you think about smartphones, they're the biggest, they're now the biggest source of cameras in the world because it repackaged what a camera was or what a video recorder was. So often what we find with technology is it's the integration of capability. So I think what consumers are going to find is using their over-the-top provider, maybe that there's a partnership with their carrier that makes that attractive to use around the world. Maybe it's, the fact that things work better together or in a more integrated fashion, or maybe on a unified bill, for a service. Maybe maybe someday I'm able to get Skype a certain amount of Skype as part of my package from my local mobile operator that I use for voice services for international. So I think it may just be more of the nuance of making things work better versus revolution. Mm-hmm. Now, saying all that, you know, I often reflect on how easy it is to travel today, because no matter where I go, I have navigation at my fingertips. I'm in touch. I can get a hold of anybody. If I need to translate a language, I can translate it. I can do whatever I want. If I compare that to the first time I went to Asia over 30 years ago, everything was in kanji. Nothing was in English. You know, I had paper maps. I'd have to go to a payphone. You know, I'd be my body weight would double with coins to carry to make the call. I mean, life has become easier. Mm-hmm. And it's become easier because we've made functions work better, not that we've necessarily reinvented the function or come up with a new function.
Yeah.
So I guess my summary would be, I think things are going to be easier, better to use, and you're going to have to think about it less. Because I think that's, again, what the consumer wants. They just want a wireless broadband connectivity anywhere in the world, cost effectively. That's right. All. Now, that's all is hard to deliver. But that's what we need to do with our customers.
Right. That's where I was going to go next. So I know you've been jetting around the world, and you know we're coming off of Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, and so you've been in front of and talking to customers, mobile network operators, and other thinkers inside of technology world. The question I have is, you know, what will be the biggest challenges from an industry perspective to keep all of this happening, especially considering your statistic on how many mobile devices are out there and how many continue to grow?
Providing the bandwidth is always going to be a challenge, you know, for the mobile operator. Mm-hmm. You know, the working in the air, it's a finite resource in that spectrum, if you will. So what you'll see is the operators are going to be changing over time, and many of them are already doing this, how they design the wireless network. So today we think about a cellular network as being a macro cell. It serves, you know, thousands of people in a radius of some limited proximity. In the future, people will be using something called a heterogeneous network. And again, in some networks, this is already occurring, where they'll have a combination of perhaps Wi-Fi on one end, in between something called a small cell. It serves a limited radius and limited people. Maybe it's installed in your building, so you have better coverage, and you're quickly being able to take it into copper or fiber, so you can get it out of the air. So you'll see a blend of technologies transparently utilized by the consumer, because again, they don't care; they just want wireless service. So you'll find on the wireless side, you'll find heterogeneous networking as well as a continuation of improving the transport across the air. And there's many smart companies dedicated to doing this. But in many companies have said, look, in the next few years, we need to figure out how to get 1,000 more times bandwidth out of the air. That's a big challenge, but it's happening at all levels, chipsets, all the way to the networking equipment. This is one challenge. Another thing that we see going on the network is to make things cost effective for the consumer. We see carriers around the world looking at trying to leverage the trend in computing in general, and really move the specialized world of telecommunications to more of a generalized world of IT infrastructure. So in the future, instead of seeing perhaps a specialized switch in a network, you're going to see more industry standard servers built by people like IBM or HP or Cisco with a virtualized middleware layer. And on top of that, you'll have telecom instances of applications running. Mm. So we call this network function virtualization, but you can just think about this as really the virtualization of the network. So what's happening really is the whole telecom world is becoming IT-ized, mm-hmm. if you will. So we see changes in the core network that are saying telecom is going to become another IT thing because it's just IP, and we're going to see a lot of progress on the RF or the radio side or wireless side of the business too. So nothing stands still in our industry. There's tremendous innovation. Great companies all around the world working to solve this problem, carriers that are committed to their customers and trying to deliver on this promise of ubiquitous, cost-effective wireless service with greater and greater speeds.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So this is what's going on. So this is not for the faint of heart. It's nonstop motion. But for me, having been in the business over 30 years, I can't think of anything more exciting to be working on.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, you know, when the notion of something being wireless or something being wired is just you know, the difference of which chip it's going through inside of a inside of the processor, whether it's a phone or whether it's a server. It's kind of mind-boggling, especially given where we've come from, and especially given the days of the PBX and all these things that we remember from way back when.
Well, that's a good example, though. In the enterprise, way back when, 20 years ago, 20-plus years ago, big enterprises had somebody that was a communications manager or a PBX manager. They don't exist anymore. They're a dinosaur. Mm. It's all IT. In fact, everything's all IT. Light bulbs, LED light bulbs have IP addresses. HVAC is IT. Security is IT. So the enterprise has been IT-ized already, and now we believe that the carrier or service provider network, it too will be IT-ized in the same manner.
Hmm. And that's where some of these like things like LTE that we've been talking about today are going to come in and help that evolution to take place.
Since they're all IP, that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Always be a need for the specialized RF or wireless or radio engineer, but more of the core network is going to just be 100% IT, IP.
Right. So there's got to be a role of governments in all of this as well. And I know you travel extensively, so you see the difference in how governments are approaching this problem and how the governments are approaching how to make all this happen and happen in a way that's going to be good for the consumer, good for business, good for everybody. My question is to you is, in the mobile industry, there's a lot of trade associations, and I know that ASINT belongs to some of them, and the mobile network operators are served by some of them here in the United States. Tell me a little bit about what roles you see those kinds of organizations playing to benefit mobile operators, the industry, and the countries that those things serve.
Well, I think that the associations have a lot of alignment with the regulatory bodies because they should have ultimately the same constituent, and that is the consumer and what's in the best interest of the consumer. So I think the associations, be it the large ones globally like GSMA or in the U.S., groups like the CTIA or the CCA, Competitive Carriers of America, they play a vital role because they help their operators, but really, you know, they do a lot of lobbying, and that lobbying is to make sure that spectrum is available, that it's cost effective, and that they can serve their customers. And I think the U.S. in general has done a very good job here. I mean, I'm sure operators can say they can always do a better job, but you know, the U.S. has great LTE coverage. We've been very innovative, and it's really been, there's been a great incentive, you know, for operators to go forward in this manner. I think Asia has done a great job. And having great communications infrastructure can tie to economic development. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this goes from developed nations, you know, having the best infrastructure to developing nations. On the developing nation side, just having wireless infrastructure, period, has been shown to there's been direct correlations shown between wireless penetration and increases in GDP in developing nations. For example, the Clinton Initiative has been very involved in this type of tracking because of the impact it has on microloans, on entrepreneurship, on healthcare, on fundamental aspects of developing nations. In the mature countries, though, progressive policy gets new technology out there which can make a country more competitive. I think the U.S. has done a great job. I think throughout Asia, they've done a very good job. I think Europe has, frankly, been a little behind. And I think, you know, they probably got behind because they issued 3G licenses, and they saw it as a way to make a lot of money and sell those licenses for a lot. So the carriers weren't excited about going to the next technology because they're still paying for the old technology. And then about the time they had to start thinking about this, there was kind of an economic downturn. So then people weren't excited about buying the next license. So those things can kind of snowball. So there's The topic you've touched on is incredibly complex because it deals with economic development, be it a mature economy or a developing economy. It deals with the nation's competitiveness. But at the back of all of our minds should be what's in the best interest of the consumer and the constituents within a country.
Right. Well, I think that a way that these organizations can help is that, I mean, I was living in Europe back when GSM was first came out, and it was well ahead of it being announced in the United States. Maybe you know the specifics better than me, but it was easier. It was just easier to do business. It was easier to roam. It was easier on so many different levels to work with that through, you know, those different countries in Europe at the time. And it's interesting that, you know, then they get held up because of an economic turndown. And I think that's an area where you know, really lobbyists have to, are in a position to say, people like the CCA, et cetera, to be able to say, look, you know, this is the right thing to do, whether this is the right economic time to do it or not.
Yes, Sandro, it's a really interesting point. When you lived in Europe, Europe was quite far ahead, especially Scandinavia. It's really interesting. With each generation of technology, the lead has kind of shifted around. 1G, it was really the U.S. because it really all started up in the with companies like Motorola. And that was kind of the 1G business. 2G, the lead really shifted in the first GSM, really shifted to Scandinavia with companies like Ericsson and Nokia taking the lead. 3G, in many ways, moved to Asia taking the lead. Whereas now in 4G, LTE, I think the U.S. largely has taken a lead because of the impact of applications and devices. So clearly, companies like Google and Apple have had an incredibly large global influence on the industry, and that has made the carriers, I think, in the U.S. progressive, innovative, and they've become better companies as a result. So I'd say that some of the strongest markets are Asia and the U.S., but the lead has kind of bounced around. And this goes to my point that I mentioned before. This is not an industry where you can sit around and say, we've done it, or rest on your laurels. You can't rest for one moment. It is constantly moving around. You can be in the lead one day, and you can be you may not be a player the next day. We've seen this time and time again. You know, companies like Nortel don't exist. You know, BlackBerry was on top of the world in 2007, and now they're, I'm sure they'll come up with a way to be to leverage what assets they have, but they're going to be a different company, in the future. So people have come and gone. So there's winners and losers, but the common element here is the carriers have done well, but they've done well because they continue to innovate, they continue to move forward, and despite the fact that it's amazingly challenging. And think about the complexity. It's not just the technology and the science. You are working within a regulatory framework in which everybody should have the same goal of customer constituents' best interest. How we get there sometimes isn't exactly aligned. So I think we have the best customers in the world. I feel fortunate that we have them, because their job's not easy, and I know that their job's never done. And neither is ours.
No, it is. Well, Mark, this has been a fascinating conversation, and I wanted to thank you for joining us today. And we will be signing off for the day momentarily, but is there anything else you wanted to leave us with, any other kernels of wisdom? This has been fascinating.
Well, I appreciate you asking us to be on the show. This is probably not a common topic, since a user may use us and not even know, but the takeaway that no matter who their carrier is in the U.S., I think that we're fortunate here that we've got open networks, we've got a competitive market, we've got great services available, there's great choices out there in the marketplace, and so I feel lucky that we have that, and I feel fortunate that ASINT and the people of ASINT are able to participate and help our customers be successful so these services can be delivered. So, Sandra, thank you very much for inviting us and for having a little bit more of a company that's in the guts of a business versus it's something that a consumer might touch and feel on a day-to-day basis.
No, it's been excellent. And again, we've had Mark Zients, President and CEO of ASINT Incorporated. This has been High Velocity Business Radio. And this is Sander Bean signing off. As soon as Kevin gives me some music here. And we'll see you next week. Desiree Scales will be back.